Water is refreshing. Water is relaxing. It sustains life. But water can also be dangerous. It can become toxic and deadly, capable of destroying life itself. It's much the same with your sexuality. In the right context, it is natural and enjoyable. But sex has a dangerous side as well. And after divorce, you'll be faced with a flood of feelings and a lot of sexual pressure. Today on Divorce Care, we will help you understand how to approach your sexuality in your new status as a single adult.
Hello again, I'm Steve Grissom and welcome to Divorce Care. There's a beautiful lake on the other side of the huge dam behind me. This lake provides recreation and a source of drinking water. But to create the lake, the dam has to support the pressure of billions and billions of gallons of water pushing against it. And that's a lot of pressure. If you're trying to hold the line on sexual temptation, you can probably relate to the dam. Just as it holds the lake back, you're trying to keep your sexual urges in check. And while the dam is strong and well-engineered, you may be doubting whether you'll be able to withstand the pressure. But that feeling isn't unusual. To make matters worse, the pressure is amplified because you've enjoyed the freedom of sexual expression in your marriage. And now it's gone, and quite frankly, it's likely you miss it.
It's one thing to think about going to first base, but when you've been all the way around the bases and now you can't do that, that is a very, very powerful temptation.
As we continue to see each other, it does get a little more difficult.
I truly had come to this conclusion that A, I was never getting married again, and B, I'm not going to go the rest of my life without having sex. You can just forget about that.
So clearly, the desire to have sex is real. And while it may not be easy, your desires can be controlled. Now, at this point in the discussion, however, we are often asked, why bother holding back? Or what's the big deal anyway? Isn't almost everyone sexually active? Well, fair questions considering the norms in our culture. So we want to put the issue of sexual expression after divorce in context by returning to God's design for marriage and sexuality. Now please keep an open mind and listen carefully to what our experts have to say. God created sex to give us a metaphor for the profound intimacy and enjoyment we can experience with Him. Now, understanding that concept is key to expressing and controlling your sexuality.
It's special because it is actually a metaphor and a picture for God's union with me.
In other words, when a couple is having sex, they are bonding their bodies and their souls together.
It is a picture of that much greater love story, really, which is about God coming after me and pursuing me in His love.
His is a covenant of forever with us. And it's how He designed the sexual relationship to reflect that in a marriage covenant.
But my sexuality then is so crucial because it reflects my longing to be known as I really am and still loved. And when you think about it, that's what's most valuable to me about my relationship with God. Someone really knows me as I really am, and I'm still loved.
So God designed sex to take place in the context of marriage. When you step outside of His plan, you open the door to negative consequences like guilt, sexually transmitted diseases, or having a child out of wedlock. Yet another consequence is emotional suffering.
I can pretend all day long that my sexuality is over here and my life with God is over there. But in reality, what I do with my body influences my soul.
The chances are the marriage that you are coming out of has been unhealthy for some time, and it will be very easy to see sex as a quick fix for the kind of closeness that you want. But you will need to remind yourself that sex alone is not that, and it magnifies the pain of loneliness. It does not resolve it. So when we go outside of what He has designed, there is brokenness and pain and shame and this sense of, I am somehow not enough.
Those who are just using sex outside of marriage are at risk of being something like babies with power tools, and that's a good way to get hurt.
When we expose our most vulnerable self, our most naked self to another person, and that person then walks out of our lives, the heartache that comes is so devastating.
Okay, what's wrong with me? What didn't I have this man wanted? And their whole image of themselves, their whole value of themselves generally begins to sink a few notches. And unfortunately, that then causes them to attach to men they might not have attached to earlier.
Have you ever heard of a disease called river blindness? With it, you can literally lose your sight from drinking parasite-infected water. Now, in a similar way, when you drink from sexual waters that God says are off-limits, you can develop a sort of blindness as well, something we call relational blindness.
You would not go to an art auction that you were going to bet your life savings. You wouldn't go dead drunk. And that's exactly what you're doing when you develop sexual intimacy on the other side of marriage.
Because sex is so powerful, emotionally and physically, that becomes consuming, and it becomes distracting for that couple to really look at the relationship objectively.
When you're choosing to get involved sexually, it's really hard to hear God's voice, because what we tend to do is we'll get involved in that way, and then we start hiding from God.
Sex then creates this artificial conviction that I'm truly in love.
We start, what was that? Oh, can't hear you, sorry. And we keep moving on because we're liking this connection, but God might be waving all kinds of red flags. Stop, don't go forward, this isn't good.
It fogs over emotional health issues in the relationship, character, quality, integrity issues in the relationship. It fogs over compatibility issues in the relationship.
Right now I can say that I won't have sex again before I'm married. I think I'm a lot stronger than I was before, because before I didn't really care one way or the other. Now I don't want to, because I know that if I do, then that will start blinding me from who the other person is. And plus, God said it's not right.
When sex doesn't blind you from seeing a person's flaws, you begin to expect more from those you're dating.
It is a powerful, powerful thing in relationship to choose to stay pure while you're dating, because it gives you an opportunity to really know the other person's heart, and it gives you the opportunity to be loved.
You're able to be free to be yourself, and another person is celebrating you for who you are.
And the other aspect that I think is equally wonderful for a woman is that she finds more freedom to actually expect more from a man. In other words, I'm looking for you, so to speak, to be a stand-up guy, not just to be good in bed, but to be able to support me, to be able to hear me, to be able to bring your strength to the picture in the relationship.
Having sex between a husband and wife is probably, it's less than 10% of your relationship, meaning that the bulk of your time together is communication. And doing less enjoyable things like laundry and doing the dishes and taking care of the kids. So it's a lie to believe that once you get to have sex, it's going to be all the time and it's going to be wonderful and it's going to be the foundation for your relationship. It's actually just a very small piece of the pie.
You want to find out not what the dude is like when he's dating you to get something. It's when you don't give him anything. What's he like then?
The great irony to it all is that it works just upside down to what our fears are, and we find that we end up with a antenna and a expectation that leads us to better men who treat us much better than when our sexual favors were just poured out for all to enjoy.
Now here's another sobering thought. If you're sexually active, even if you marry the person you've been sleeping with, you still will deal with negative consequences.
Fast forward into marriage. You're married, you've been married 2 or 3 years, and your husband has to go off on a business trip. The night before he leaves, you have a big, huge blowout fight. He walks out the door, and he gets on the airplane, he flies off to Las Vegas for the business meeting. And do you think you're gonna lay down in your bed that night? Do you think the enemy's not gonna come to you and whisper in your ear? Well, remember, he couldn't control himself with you, who he cared about. Why do you think he's gonna control himself when someone throws herself at him in Las Vegas after the way you guys talk to each other?
It breeds mistrust and the fear of abandonment and jealousy. And it's a little bit like injecting a poison.
It sows the seeds of suspicion and doubt.
How can you trust the other person to have been pure for you because you weren't pure for them?
Now, on a blistering hot day, I could come up with any number of rationalizations why it would be okay to go swimming in this lake, even in an area where swimming was not allowed. It's the same way when you're dealing with sexual expression outside of marriage. You'll be tempted to rationalize the behavior. We call these the yeah buts. For example, yeah, but it won't hurt anybody if I go swimming here. So let's look now at some of the most common yeah buts related to the topic of single sexuality. Up first, I couldn't control myself.
To take sexual pleasure and to say, well, I couldn't control myself, what you're really saying is I cared more about myself than I cared about you. I've seen it often happen now in my office, people talking about the woman offering sex to the man. In a sense, that's selfish. Who does she really care about? Him or her? She cares about her. That's selfish. It's the same way with men. If a man's trying to get the woman to violate her conscience in order to please him, and she doesn't want to lose him, and it's selfish. It's manipulation, and it's sin, and it's destructive.
Here's another thing we hear people say as a way to justify sex outside of marriage. They explain that it's okay because, in their words, they are married in God's sight.
Every one of us would like to think our situation is unique. We are uniquely in love. We are uniquely bound together for life. But the reality is, no.
The only way you're married in the eyes of God is to be married. You walk down the aisle between God and people, and you commit your life to the other person in a ceremony. In some way, you are showing with witnesses you're serious.
We also hear people follow the old adage, act now and ask forgiveness later, when it comes to their sexual activity. You might be able to pull this approach off in some areas of life, but it doesn't work with God.
I'm going to do whatever I want to do, and God will forgive me. There are two sides of a coin. One side is forgiveness. The other side is power to change. Time and time again, God says, I will forgive you. I want to see change. Change for the good and for the better. Not just, oh, well, he'll forgive me.
Sometimes, because of the suffering you've experienced, you might feel entitled to a bit of sexual indiscretion. You may even wonder, why is a little bit of fun such a big deal?
What's a sexual encounter? This is small on the scale with this person that I'm dating or I've met over a weekend or whatever it is. It seems to be small on the scale, but it is still bringing something like a fireball, actually, into the very center of the wound that is already created there. It just simply makes it that much harder to reestablish our footing, to get our grounding, really, on the other side of divorce.
Many of you are obeying God's instructions on sex, but now that your spouse is gone, you may be wondering, what was the point of being faithful?
I've gone X number of years trying to be the right kind of person
I've been good and I've been available and I've been helpful, and look where it got me. And so they think, well, why don't we try the other side of life for a while? And there'll be people that go out and they turn into party animals, and they used to not be that way, or they hang out with folks who don't have the same spiritual values, but it's like, well, you know, I tried that and it didn't get me anywhere, so why not?
Dr. Carter has counseled people who've given up on their sexual morals, and time and time again, he has to walk them through the consequences of their decisions.
Most of the time when you've had some experiences with life where you stretched your morality beyond what you know is wisest and best, then when you eventually come back to some of your more traditional values, you can look upon that kind of shaking your head thinking, what in the world was going on inside of me? I rarely find people who down the road will look back on that time of confusion or experimentation and say, boy, am I glad I did all of that.
There's one last yeah but that we need to cover. It's yeah but what about pornography? That's not hurting anyone, right?
People say that. Wouldn't it better for me to view pornography and masturbate than to go have sex with some woman before marriage? And I would say, well, it depends on what you mean by better. Is it good? Is it better to harm just yourself and not two people? Yes. Is it acceptable and right and good and smart? Absolutely not. The studies are clear. The scripture, I think, made it clear anyway, but studies have since proven scripture, they typically do, that what pornography does is it degrades your perception and your view of women, men, and yourself. In other words, if it's a woman viewing pornography, she begins to view men as objects and dehumanize sexuality. If the man's viewing it, he views women as objects and he dehumanizes sexuality.
With so many opinions out there, it can be hard to figure out what's sexually appropriate or inappropriate. On top of that, your own desires can cloud your judgment. Unfortunately, we don't have time to discuss the morality of every sexual expression, but here are three clarifying questions you can ask yourself. First, what does the Bible say? Basically, before you reach a conclusion, check to see if the Bible speaks directly to the issue. Second, what does my pastor or a spiritually mature leader in my church say? You may feel uncomfortable talking with others about sex. But the Bible says we make bad decisions when we disregard good advice. So, to the degree appropriate and in a way that protects your privacy, get the input from wise people. And third, does this cause me to think impure thoughts? Jesus said that it's a sin to think sexually about someone that you're not married to. That doesn't mean you won't naturally find people of the opposite sex attractive, but at minimum, it means that you should refrain from and avoid activity that causes you to have inappropriate or explicit sexual thoughts.
So you can see that God's rules about sex are designed to protect you and to make sure you experience His best for your life.
Why does God limit sex to marriage?
It's not to rob us of fun. It's not to steal our pleasure. It's not to be some kind of formal daddy in the sky who wags his finger at us and enjoys having control over every aspect of our lives.
It's not because He's restrictive and that He's a killjoy.
The ways of the Lord are good, and they're satisfying and they're rewarding.
He calls us to stay pure as a single person because He longs to protect us.
I want to wait till I'm married, because that will be the best. It will be the best for both of us.
Sex is like a good fire. In the fireplace, it's beautiful. In the curtains, it's a disaster. Sex in marriage is wonderful.
Sin always brings death, but so often what it brings is the death of God's best for me.
So what if you haven't been pure sexually? Does that mean that there's no reason to try to be pure in the future? No, not at all. Given all of the risks contrasted with the many blessings you'd receive by reserving sex for marriage, it only makes sense to maintain your purity moving forward.
I would love to say that when I faced those battles, I did it perfectly, that I fought off all temptations, that I fought for my healing, that I did everything right. But the truth is, I made a lot of missteps and a lot of mistakes.
Here's the lie of the devil. Because you did it once, it's no longer important to God that you try to live pure in the days ahead.
Sometimes we think, well, I've made all these bad choices in my past. What does it matter now? I mean, that's already a done deal.
That is not true. And even if you've sinned once or 100 times sexually, God wants you to try to live for Him in a way that honors Him today. And God can help you do that.
Now, it's not quite as easy as that. It's not just a decision. We absolutely need some people around us. We need truth. We need all kinds of things to help equip us to stand in that decision.
Please don't look at yourself through the lens of, well, I'm damaged goods. Well, I'm a failure. I've messed up so many times. It doesn't matter if I try today.
God is able, no matter where we have been, to give us such a sense of cleanness on the inside and freedom, an innocence of soul that allows us to begin again in a very fresh way.
And I would encourage you to acknowledge your sin before God, confess it to God and the appropriate people, bring some people around your life to help you, but seek to please Him today, even if you failed so many times before.
One of the benefits of being a Christian is that God does more for us than forgive us. He also imputes or transfers the perfect moral record of Jesus to us.
And if I know Jesus Christ as Savior and Lord, now I have new life in Him. And because Christ has lived perfectly, I now have the privilege of having that righteousness imputed to me. So when God the Father looks at me, and if you know Christ, friend, when God the Father looks at you, He doesn't see you in light of your past. He doesn't see you in light of your failures. He sees you in light of the finished work of Jesus Christ, the imputed righteousness upon you. That's why He loves you. That's why He could call you His son or His daughter, because of the righteousness of Christ that you now bear because of God's great love for you.
When people come to my office talking about some of the mistakes they've made in their new single life, one of the things that I try to do with them is to say, you know, life is a learning process. And whereas we need to have an appropriate sense of guilt, we don't want to hold on to it in such a way that it causes us to feel completely debilitated from that point forward. And even then, as we look back and see some of the mistakes we've made, we can still find God's forgiveness and we can still become recommitted to the things that we know are wisest and good. And I believe that God can honor us, but sometimes it may leave a scar too.
So staying away from false and destructive forms of intimacy would be a whole lot easier if you didn't have to deal with temptation. So how do you deal with it? Well, first, it helps to know what temptation is.
The mixture between my desire plus appeal and opportunity, that forms that dynamic of temptation. And you can take that step, and once you take that step, you've acted and sin has been committed. James chapter 1 tells us that when we're tempted, don't say that we're being tempted of God, but each one is carried away by his own lust, meaning that it is from within us. There is a dark side of us, there's a sin nature, there's something in us that likes sin. And you know, a person is a fool who does not understand that in us and each one of us is something that will cause us to destroy ourselves.
So I hope now that you have a better understanding of what temptation is. Let's move on now and look at helpful strategies for responding to it. The first, find accountability.
I did not do a really good job during the first part of my divorce proceedings of staying sexually pure.
We're really vulnerable when we're going through a hard time, when we're hurting, you know. Divorce, separation, conflict, that kind of thing sets us up.
We all are blind to our own failings, our own weaknesses. We're overestimate ourselves and our abilities.
So then you might say, well, how do I compensate for my blind spots?
I found that I really need to have accountability in my life.
The accountability partners will step in and put their hand out and say, you guys need to not be alone for a little while.
So I need people in my life that I trust, I've learned to trust, people who share my values, that I know over time have my best interest in mind, have told me the truth. So give yourself time, invite people that you trust, and then you gotta listen to them. I mean, don't discount, don't say, oh, she's just jealous because I have somebody and she doesn't. If you've really learned to trust that person, then you also really need to listen to what they're trying to tell you.
Do not lie to yourself about your vulnerabilities. Your best ally is to be able to say to yourself, I am weak.
Redirecting your sexual energy is another way to respond to temptation. This strategy is sometimes called sublimation.
You know, people say take cold showers. Well, that may or may not work. And so I don't want to just send you off to the shower because you can't stay in the shower the rest of your life either.
You redirect that energy and stop thinking about sex and start thinking about serving God, helping somebody else. Exercise.
After my divorce, I ran a 10K. I ran the Peachtree Road Race in Atlanta. It was helpful. And I know other people that will say to me, I do kickboxing.
What are some things that you can do to keep yourself moving or to distract yourself from thinking about that too much?
One of my single friends presently, she's an artist. And so she says, all this extra sexual energy I'm redirecting into my art.
It really is no different than learning how to sit still in a concert or somewhere where you're not supposed to be making noise or moving around. Your body still wants to, the energy's still there. You redirect that energy into something else.
If you make a practice of putting honor before pleasure in all aspects of your life, over time, it will become easier to apply the same principle to your sexuality.
Sexual temptation is always the temptation to put pleasure before honor. And this is something that you can begin to apply in other areas of your life other than sexual temptation. When you are in the midst of a situation when it would be very easy to gain relief from tearing down your spouse because they hurt you, and they really did, and you could speak out against them, but you begin to realize the pleasure that I could gain from speaking this, the laughter that may come in the room, is I can't put that ahead of the principles of honor that create a safe environment for me and my children to live in relationally and socially. As I begin to put honor before pleasure, that is the same principle that I'm applying in the area of sexual temptation. And when we see that there is this principle that I can apply in areas that don't have to do with sex, it allows me to begin to build a momentum and see the fruit of that. At moments when this very organic bodily temptation of sexuality, that it is hard to build that moment when that urge just seems to come over me in moments of weakness or when I'm all alone.
The Bible tells us that controlling your thoughts is the key to winning the fight against temptation. Think of yourself as your mind's security guard. You have to be on the lookout for impure thinking.
It starts in your mind. And that kind of fuels your actions. And so if you're thinking about, oh, how they look or what could happen, you know, as you're getting ready, or then it just is a way to kind of, you know, sort of slowly tiptoe into it.
You also want to be careful about the type of movies you expose yourself to, the type of TV programs that you watch, the books that you read, because a lot of times those things can stimulate you and you don't want to create any type of arousal.
When you recognize an impure thought, replace it with one that corresponds to the truth. So, how do you learn to spot these lies? Read the Bible, good Christian books, and listen to solid Christian teaching. You may not be dating right now. In fact, dating may be the last thing on your mind. And also, a friendly reminder here that, as you learned in earlier sessions, most of you are nowhere near being emotionally ready to date. But that said, we know that at some point, most of you will date again. So, with that perspective, Here are strategies to help you see God's plan for relationships and sexuality. We'll also have some overall general advice on dating. But let's start with the most frequently asked question we get about sexual purity. And that is this: how far is too far?
How far is too far? I would suggest that maybe that's not the best question.
We'll say, okay, here's my line. I'm only going to go this far. That's it. So totally like right here. No further. Promise.
That's almost like a person who's driving around a mountaintop road and asking, how close can I get to the cliff without falling off?
And then you get in the heat of the moment and you push that line a little bit. And then the next time you're together, you're like, okay, that's it. You know, I'm only going to go this far and no further. I promise.
I don't know if you've ever driven with a person like that. I don't like driving with people like that.
What I oftentimes see with couples is there's this expectation that, okay, here's the line, but I'm going to be the accelerator and your job is to be the brake. And so if we're not going to cross that line, it's going to be up to you. And that's a really unfair and selfish pressure to put on someone else.
I want to be in the car with a person who's staying as close to the side of the hill as possible.
It goes with the law of diminishing returns. In other words, you touch and then it only, you know, well, this only does so much, and then it loses a little bit of that kindle, a little bit of that fire, so you have to push the envelope a little further.
The person who asks, is it sin yet? Is it sin yet? Is it sin yet? Is eventually going to fall off the cliff. And so it's wise in a physical relationship during a time of dating not to stir passions that cannot be righteously satisfied. And it's always wisest to do less, not more. And you'll be glad when you're married that that's the choice that you made.
It would be crazy to jump out of a boat in the middle of a lake if you did not know how to swim, wouldn't it? People would rightly conclude that you were putting yourself in a situation you couldn't handle. And obviously, most people wouldn't do that. But when it comes to dating, they are much more likely to set themselves up for surefire moral failure. So here are strategies to protect you from similar mistakes when you're dating.
You can totally set yourself up for failure. Like, just be all about the good intentions. Yeah, I'm going to stay pure. So I'm going to go ahead and invite him over tonight, and we're going to watch a movie and, you know, put the kids to bed.
Well, when you're on that couch and you're cuddling, there's something about body and touch that stimulates your body.
See, that's one of the dangers of being a single parent and not having the cash for a babysitter.
His shoulders were stiff and his neck, he was in pain. I just rubbed his shoulders for a second.
But you're saying, oh no, I'm not gonna do anything.
And now I rubbed her shoulders for a second, and the next thing you know, it's,
I'm totally not gonna do anything. I'm totally not gonna, you know, all of a sudden you're smooching and making out. It just doesn't work to say, I'm not gonna do this, but then do everything to give yourself the chance to do it.
So I just tell them they're being foolish.
Well, you really have to be strict with yourself, almost like you would with a teenager, that you would say, okay, you know, we're only gonna date in public and we're not gonna sit in the car for half an hour. No, you know, we're gonna say goodnight and end the date. We're gonna, you have to be intentional to really live this out. I'm committed to staying pure now that I really felt a conviction and, okay, start dating. And if a man chooses to honor my purity and doesn't make any moves, I would feel this little thing rise up in me like, what? Doesn't he find me attractive? Doesn't he? And I would actually, you know, dress myself up a little more and maybe go a little bit low cut and say, well, you know, sidle up a little bit and make a couple of moves myself to try and test the water. Am I attractive to this person? Am I desirable? So in my need, my dysfunctional need to be found attractive and desirable, I would push the envelope of purity when this guy would try to be honoring that in me. So we as women have to be really careful in this, that if a guy honors our stance in that and also holds that value, not to take it personally, not to think that it's because we're not beautiful or desirable or attractive and make some moves and sidle up, just trust that you are enough without having to go there.
You'll also want to avoid intimate conversation with your date, especially late at night. Chuck Millian explains why.
It's an intimate thing to a woman to have a conversation, and especially a meaningful, deep conversation where you're sharing a lot of your thoughts, your dreams, your fears, your desires, all the things that you would do with a spouse. People tend to get too far into that before they have a commitment of marriage. And when couples often staying up late, which is another one of the time bombs, they get tired, your defenses get weak, and they begin sharing and talking way too much, way too soon. It creates a false sense of intimacy and commitment. And the woman especially feels herself emotionally stirred, and then bonding stages are kicking in, and it's moving her emotionally to want to bond physically. And most men don't understand that. And if they do, they manipulate it out of sin, which is why you shouldn't say certain things until you mean them.
Even though God will help you avoid sexual temptation, it's still important for you to have a plan that equips you to respond when you're enticed. As we mentioned before, this plan should include having accountability partners, avoiding risky situations, being careful about intimate conversation, and consistent church involvement.
We should not trust ourselves. We shouldn't trust our flesh. We shouldn't trust ourselves and put ourselves in situations in which we're capable of falling. You know, the Bible says that there's no temptation taking you but such as is common to man. But God will make a way to escape if we look for it. And so he'll flash some exit signs, but he's not going to push us through the door.
If you have children, you'll want to consider them as you date. That means you'll need to be careful about when and how you introduce your children to new dating partners.
Our mom has a boyfriend now. And that was a little strange.
If you think like a child, you could see how disturbing all of these things could be.
I just felt like they were going to take my mom away from me, and I'm not going to have anybody left because my dad's already gone, and my mom's going to have another man, and I'm just going to be left here.
I can remember when my girl was 3 or 4, and I was dating, and I was holding somebody's hand, and she grabbed our hands, and she tore them apart, and she said, "My mommy," and she grabbed my hand and held my hand, and that's really what kids think.
If you try to imagine your own parents divorced and then relating to another person and kissing them and holding them and doing things that maybe your own you may never have seen your own parents do.
It's hard to adjust to because, you know, you get so used to seeing your parents together all the time.
Now, they may not say it out loud at 10, 15 years old, but it's what their heart feels. My mom, my dad. It doesn't feel like they are gaining someone. It feels like they're losing you.
If you have children, you'll want to consider them as you date. That means you'll need to be careful about when and how you introduce your children to new dating partners.
For a while, our mom was dating the same guy she is now, but they separated for a little bit. And I kind of miss him because I just started to get fond of him.
What you want to do is, if you do want to introduce them to see, okay, how are they relating, then do it in a group environment. Do it with a bunch of friends. Hang out with a group so that it doesn't feel so very threatening or it doesn't have that sense of family right away. Because a child, they see mom and a new person and me. It's immediately this sense, oh, we're a family, or, you know, dad with a woman and me. Okay, we're a family. So avoid that pressure on the situation and introduce them in a group.
As you can see, if you have children, it's important to consider their feelings as you evaluate when and who to date. If you don't, you could inflict a lot of hurt and pain on them. So talk to your kids, listen to them, and do whatever it takes to stay aware of their unique expectations, needs, and concerns. As we close this session today, I'd like to remind you again that the wisest strategy for most of you is to postpone dating until you are healed and whole. As you will remember from earlier sessions, you'll be tempted to jump into a relationship long before you're ready. Now, if you've already been in a relationship and were sexually active, we don't want this session to leave you overwhelmed by guilt. God is ready to forgive you if you've strayed from His plan for sexuality. All you have to do is ask. This week's On My Own section of the Divorce Care Workbook will show you how to claim His forgiveness for yourself. And as we wrap up, remind yourself that God's rules about sex are designed to protect you. Anytime you break them, you put yourself at risk and you miss out on God's best.
After his divorce, Daniel thought it would be difficult to stay sexually pure. Check out this week's On My Own section in your Divorce Care Workbook to find out what lessons he's learned to fight temptation.
I can't forgive him. I definitely can't forgive her, and I'm not interested in forgiving them.
Forgiveness. Discover when you should and when you shouldn't on the next session of Divorce Care.
It's not making excuses for someone, but it's just letting go.
Don't miss this important topic and come prepared for a breakthrough in your healing process.
Thanks for joining us. We'll see you next time.